Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor. On the seventh episode of this show, we're recording from our studios in Canary Wharf, London, and I'm joined by an award-winning chef and the managing director of a leading refrigeration company. On this episode, we're going to be discussing technology in the kitchen, and it's been kindly sponsored by Adandy Refrigeration. Now, my first guest qualified as a chef in her teens, and she worked in the sector for many years until she left and headed into sales. But in her private time, she kept up with private dining and food demonstrations. Very sadly, in 2017, she lost her mum to pancreatic cancer, and within 4 weeks, she had a huge shock. And this strong, independent lady, unfortunately, suffered a breakdown in 2018, following the loss of her dear mum. In 2019, she came at a crossroads in her life, and she decided it was time to evaluate the direction of her career. She subsequently handed in her notice, despite working her way all the way up in sales, for a large salary and all the perks that came with that role, and she decided to head back into the world of catering. Starting off with private dining and followed by food demonstrations and even cookery lessons, she now runs a very successful catering company, Culinary Bites with Sophie, for events and parties all over the UK, and runs monthly themed pop-up restaurants and assists in promoting local suppliers. She's won Casual Dining Chef of the Year, Caterer of the Year 2024, Locally Sourced Chef Award 2024. She's a registered judge of the Guild of Fine Foods, to name only a few of her achievements and accolades. I'm really excited to welcome Sophie Hyman, an extraordinary lady, who actually is our first female chef on the show. Sophie, so thank you for taking the time to be on the show today. I know you've got a ridiculously busy schedule. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. I'm really well, actually. It may be busy, but that's all good.
Great. And I think you were at the Fine Food show yesterday.
Yeah, the Guild of Fine Food having a cheese tasting retail day, mainly for me to look at different cheeses I hadn't eaten. But, you know, cheese, love it. What could go wrong with that?
Fantastic. Well, that sounds good to me. So as a tradition this series, as you might know, the guest of the last episode asks the question to the guest of the next episode. So previously on the last episode, I was up in Scotland and I had the Chief Executive of Hospitality Industry Trust Scotland, David Cochrane, and he asked a question to you. You know, when you look at buffets over the years and how they've evolved, he was really impressed looking at what you're doing, your innovation, the products you offer, and he wanted to know what your personal view were on the trends for corporate buffets and how do you get inspiration for all your ideas?
Oh, okay, yeah. So it has really changed the buffet world. Obviously, after COVID, I think now people have really opened out and thought, right, okay, what can I have that's something a little bit different? It's gone to sort of sharing platters, high-end canapés, nice little bites that you can just pop in your mouth and gives you that little bit of wow flavour in there. So it's no longer staid foods, as in all beige colours and not much flavour and not much inspiration. My inspiration just comes from things I like, really.
Right.
Definitely seasonal, and try and use local suppliers. So we have, where I'm based in the Midlands, we have people that grow special microherbs. We have an amazing fishmonger that will give you advice about the fresh fish. We have a charcuterie maker. So I try and use local suppliers as well when I'm doing my buffets.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. How do you get sort of inspiration for all you're doing and, you know, and the work and that sort of thing?
I just love food, and I have a big presence on social media, so I will look at what other chefs are doing.
Yeah.
I will look at Michelin star chefs. I'll get some inspiration from street food, just across the board, really, and going to markets. Also, when I visit abroad, I always try tapas or the local seasonal dishes, and I'll think, yeah, I can do that at home. I can change that. I can maybe add that to a buffet, or I can do this. So, yeah, it's across the board.
I know you were at Borough Market this morning, I think, before coming here.
Of course, so. You have to go to Borough Market. I was quite good. I just had bread and some heritage tomatoes today.
So can you tell our listeners a bit about your culinary world? You know, what started your interest in cooking and what ultimately motivated you to get back into the catering world.
Yeah. So my motivation came from my parents. We grew up in Alderminster, which is a country village just outside Stratford-on-Avon. And part of the lifestyle was local farms, getting fresh milk just from the cows on Sunday night, walk up the hill, get the fresh milk, come back down.
Cool.
My dad worked for British Leyland and he was in charge of buying the paints. And so he would buy paints and the farmers would bring pheasants, ducks, rabbits, and he would give them paint. So all the time in our garage, there would always be a pheasant hanging, or I would help him skin the rabbits. And my mum was a very good cook. So that's where it really
all started.
Yeah.
All started. Okay. Wow. So as I mentioned in my introduction, you know, you had a life-changing experience in 2017 and, you know, the sad loss of your mum. And, then you've gone on to build your own new business, Culinary Bites with Sophie. But whilst doing all of this, then you had to battle the impact of COVID.
Yeah.
Just as you're getting started. So where do you get the strength and resilience from to push on through these things?
Again, I think it is either from your parents or you are born with that resilience that I am pushing forward. I am going to make this work. I want to be successful in what I do. And I've always had that attitude. My dad was a very strong person and he was high up in his industry.
Yeah.
And it influenced me to be a strong woman in the industry. I also think, obviously, there aren't as many females in the industry as there should be. Mm. And I wanted to gain recognition in a man's world.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know, but I did.
No, and I agree with you. I mean, it's great to have you on the show because you're our first female guest. And there's not enough female chefs, really.
No.
And I guess it is a bit of a sometimes uphill battle.
It is, yeah. I mean, I came out of it initially. So when I qualified at Stratford-on-Avon, I worked at The Opposition, which is an excellent little bistro in Stratford-on-Avon. And I worked there for a couple of years. But my first husband didn't like all the long hours. So I came out of it. I went into industrial catering, which I hated, absolutely hated. And then I went into sales. So I left the industry because of him. But now I'm back with a vengeance. and he's no longer my husband, so.
So, I mean, looking back, what the sort of pinnacle moments of your and the key experiences that shaped your career so far?
So starting my own business in 2019, that was a high. I left my previous corporate role and, yeah, handed back all the big package, the Audi A5, everything.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going back into catering after losing my mum. So starting that with nothing, mm-hmm. I had no customers, I had, you know, no catering unit, nothing.
Right.
That was a pinnacle moment. My second husband, obviously, was
challenge.
Like, wow, what are you doing? But, yeah, that was. 2017, I won Home Cook of the Year. That was before I was back into professional for Aubrey Allen Butchers.
Oh, okay.
That was, again, that was just after my mum had died. So that was quite emotional and made me realise, actually, I'm good at what I do.
Yeah.
Then 2022, I won Casual Dining Chef of the Year for Coventry and Warwickshire. 2023, I won Event Caterer of the Year for Coventry and Warwickshire and Locally Sourced Chef of the Year. So all of those things put you on a high. You realise that what you're doing is helping people to enjoy food and it's good.
Yeah, and it's being recognised.
Yeah,
exactly. Was it, I mean, working through COVID, because obviously imagine your business, you just got it off the ground, then it was sort of shut down. So how did you overcome that?
I mean, I thought, I'm just going to cry, but obviously didn't. So for the first 3 weeks, I couldn't do anything. You couldn't get any supplies. You couldn't get any rice. You couldn't get any pasta. You couldn't get any sauces. It was horrendous. But then I just thought, okay, so what would I want? And I just set up doing home-cooked meals from my unit and delivering them to people within the Coventry area.
Okay.
A lot of people were contacting me saying, my parents are there, I want to know they're getting good meals. So it was basic pastas and lasagnas and pies. It was nice. I had two lockdown birthdays and I thought, what do I want? And what I wanted was really good food. Mm. So then I started doing birthday packages, anniversary packages. Every week I would do a theme, whether it was French, Italian, and it went wild.
Home delivered.
Yeah. And wow. I was it was good because my husband was working from home. My daughter was working from home. My son was furloughed. I thought, wow, I've never seen my husband so much or any of them. So it was getting me out. And from that, my business of private dining and recommendations really grew.
Well, that's fantastic that you managed to turn a negative into a positive, really. What's some of your sort of favourite ingredients if you're hosting a dinner party or if you're cooking at home or whatever? What would you like to work with?
My ingredients are seafood and beef.
Okay.
I think as an island, we should be eating more fish and seafood. As I said, we've got a really good fishmonger in Coventry. He's one of the top 10 within the country, and he will recommend and buy in whatever seafood you want. It's very easy to cook. I think a lot of people veer away from it because they're a little bit scared.
Yeah.
But once you learn basic techniques, it's amazing. And then, beef.
If you're doing things like weddings, are people wanting seafood and things like that in there? Is it?
Not so much. Again, with weddings, the last one I actually did 2 weeks ago was family style service, Italian food. They weren't Italian, but that's what they wanted. So they had canapes, and then they all had a roast porchetta on the table.
Oh, beautiful.
They had aubergine parmigiana, and then three different salads. And that was like 15 tables of 10, and each one had the joint in front of them. I took the crackling off for them, but then they all carved it and then served it out. So that was amazing, actually. It went really well.
I saw some of the photos of that. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, it was really good. Really nice.
So I understand you were contacted by Dragon's Den Theopetitus, and who informed you that you run Small Business Sunday. What is that, and how did he contact
you? So he supports small businesses. He's been doing it for, I believe, over 3 years now.
Right.
Just to promote a group of people. There are lots of people that apply, and basically I was told I've 0.8% of the people that apply actually get recognised.
Right, okay.
And you become a small group and you promote your business within this small group, and he supports you on a yearly basis. He has a big meeting and you are obviously in contact with everybody else. But a couple of times there was just things that he tweeted or put on LinkedIn that I agreed with totally about, you know, about recognition, about starting a new business later in life, never to be afraid and things like that. So I followed him and I became part of this Small Business Sunday team, which is great because from there I've actually bought some resin design chopping boards for canapes, which are absolutely incredible. And that's a small business that I bought them from.
From the same sort of network.
Yeah. Another lady that makes her own spices, Indian spices. I've been in contact with her and we're doing a pop-up together. So it really, really inspires each other.
It's great, isn't it? And I've seen some of his LinkedIn posts. Well, actually, I follow him as well. And they're all positive, sort of inspirational. And I think it's nice to be, I'm sure it's nice to be recognised in that way.
Yeah.
So you've had quite a remarkable journey so far. What's the plans for Culinary Bites? Is there any up and coming projects or expansions you want to share with me?
Yeah, I don't sort of sit still really. So I've just bought a horse trailer.
Right, okay.
And we've converted it into, it's called Blondes and Bourbon.
Okay.
So it's street food, and all the street food has bourbon in it.
Yeah.
From a beef brisket over a waffle with pickles, mayonnaise, that type of thing. Chicken wings with bourbon, a vegan mushroom burger with bourbon, and it down to chocolate brownies, white chocolate and raspberry, and just standard chocolate with bourbon in it. And we've converted it, we've done three events, and we've sold out.
And where will you be taking that? Is that?
Well, for us, it's not going to be markets or in Coventry we have a big Digbeth dining club and that's a full day. So it's more for events. So your private birthday, your wedding, if you have a corporate day and you want us to rock up outside, we will.
Okay, yeah.
With the trailer.
And, so more sort of private events than sort of maybe festivals or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Might we see you at Glastonbury or something?
I think I'd need a bigger vehicle. But my business partner, she's blonde as well. So that's where the name came from. And the bourbon, I've always done bourbon chicken wings and I've always been told they're amazing. So
How's it been received when you've done these? She's done three so far.
Yeah.
And then
amazing. Yeah. We've been invited back. We did a gin night at a distillery again in Warwickshire, locally distilled gin. So we turned up. We were the only street food van.
Vendor.
And we sold out by 9 o'clock and the event was on till 11.
Okay.
So that was great. But we've been invited back, so they must have enjoyed it.
So, I mean, Sophie, how can people find out more about you? And have you got any products and things that you're coming through the line that you want to talk about? Or
I have, and I am planning to do a cookbook.
Okay.
So right. I'm an innovation chef for Mission Foods, who are wraps, Mexican food wraps, and also Eat With Aunties, which is an Indian sauce company. Mm-hmm. From that, I thought, well, I'm innovation. I'm giving you recipes. Where's my own? So I am going to develop a cookbook.
Which would just be your cookbook,
yes,
per se. Yeah,
okay. With some of those recipes in it. Hmm. And I'm very active on social media. So I am Culinary Bites with Sophie. Instagram, it's my name, Sophie Higham. Twitter, it's my name, Sophie Higham, because that's who I am. And LinkedIn, the same. But I'm very active and you can find me on all of those.
When do you think the book might be out? Might we see it
Hopefully the beginning of next year. Yeah. Okay. We had a photography session on Thursday last week.
Perfect.
Some really great dishes. So yeah, it's in the making.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, look, the final question for this part of the show, as you might know, is I ask all my chef guests. So you're hosting a party for three people. They can be famous or not famous. It doesn't matter. Who are you going to invite? They can be dead or alive. Who are you going to invite? Why? What would the menu be? Yeah.
Yeah. I would invite Raymond Blanc.
Okay.
I would invite Yul Brynner. Crush. I would have loved to have met him. And then my mum. Yeah,
of course. So why Raymond?
He's just an inspiration to the hospitality world. He came over here. He's embraced England and shown us how to become an amazing chef using local suppliers. He's so passionate. I've been to Le Manoir several times, been very, incredibly impressed. Okay. And I just love his passion.
Yeah,
so I think I would just be sat there like asking him so many questions. I think he'd think, wow, am I going to eat here or not?
And then your second guest, because you wanted to...
Yul Brynner, I mean, the king and I, when he stands there with his hands on his hips, you're not going to get this. But when he says, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I'm like, hello. So I would just like to meet him.
Of course.
Yeah.
And then, of course, your mum.
Yeah.
How lovely.
I miss her. So, yeah.
That'd be really nice. So what would you cook?
It would be seafood. I would use the king scallops, just lightly pan fried, just butter, garlic, lemon. Perfect with some really nice locally sourced bread. For the main course, I would go with beef. I like the Japanese Wagyu beef, but within the industry, Aubrey Allens, who are based in Coventry, but they service large restaurants, etc., as in Le Manoir, as in they're registered with the king. They have just bought in a Japanese Wagyu beef within England.
Their own herd.
Yeah, their own herd.
Right, okay.
And I've just tried that recently. I went for an open day and that is insane. So I would actually cook that. Just again, very simply, a nice sirloin. And we'd have that with a nice fresh salad, some heirloom tomatoes, basil, maybe some Jersey Royals in butter. Very simple, but
beautiful.
Nice taste.
Really nice.
Yeah.
And for dessert?
I am not so much a dessert
cheese
chef.
Cheese, maybe.
Yeah. I do like fruit puddings. So maybe, like a pavlova loaded with fresh cream, lots of fruits and a compote on top.
Beautiful. Okay, that sounds absolutely lovely. I'd like to be invited if possible. Jump onto it. So
you need to shave your head and look like Yul Brynner and then you can come.
Maybe get to the gym, eh? Well, Sophie, thank you for taking time to be part of this podcast. It's honestly been a delight to meet you and hear about your career and what you've been done. We're just going to take a short break now, and then we're going to be joined by the managing director of Adandi Refrigeration, and then you're going to come back and join us to talk about technology in the kitchen.
Okay, lovely. Thank you.
Culinary Bites with Sophie is an award-winning events caterer working nationally. Culinary Bites champion local suppliers and use seasonal ingredients to ensure dishes are of the highest quality. They offer everything from corporate catering, buffets and cocktail parties to wedding packages. Their professional team ensure delectable, delicious food is served in a friendly, professional manner. For more information, go to sophiehigham.co.uk.
Founded in 1984, Dandy Refrigeration is a worldwide high-performing refrigeration manufacturer, manufacturing everything from refrigerated drawers to powerful open display cabinets. A Dandy, on its 40th year of trading, are trusted and endeared globally as a market leader for refrigeration and respected for their innovative technology designs that meet real customer needs in food storage, display and service. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Carl Hodgson, the Managing Director of A Dandy Refrigeration. Carl's well known in our industry as a tenacious professional with a proven track record in innovation and customer satisfaction in established and emerging markets. Carl leads the global team and sales professionals, passionate, working closely with national chains, clients to improve their operating costs margin, and has successfully maintained long-term relationships and networks. Welcome to the show today, Carl. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. How are you?
I'm fine, Radford. Thank you so much for having me here today. It's a pleasure.
Great. Well, you made it all the way down from Cheshire.
From near Chester, yeah.
Yeah. Can you kick us off by giving us a short overview on your career to date in the food service equipment and a little bit about the work you do with the Dandy?
Sure. So, like most people, I should imagine I actually dropped into the catering world in food service manufacturing. It wasn't something that I went to school with and thought, that's what I want to do. I was always in the leisure industry. So, I was a football coach in my early days. So, I wanted to become a sports director in a leisure facility. That's okay. What I got qualified in. And in the end, I just fell into sales. I started off my journey more or less in the food service equipment by seeing a little ad for Taylor Freezer.
Okay, right.
So those were the days when ads were in papers were adhered. So,
yeah.
And I called up and I wrote in my CV and sent it off. And I was surprised to get, come and see us, have an interview. So I went to there, had an interview. The lady that interviewed me was, I'll never forget her. She was called Kim Cornish. She was the national sales manager for Taylor Freezer. It was something different. Mm-hmm. She said, I'm taking a gamble. I'm going to take you on. So she took me on and I performed exceptionally well. I think within 3 months, I was the top performer in the team for 3.5 years.
Wow, okay.
And then I moved on from there to a company called Servequip, mm-hmm. based in Purley Way in Croydon.
Okay, yeah, I know.
So they majority had a lot of good catering equipment in regards to the TurboChef, Lincoln Mimpinger, Henny Penny products. So they supplied that to sell rights to those particular products into the UK.
Yeah.
And they were having a brand called Carpegiani, which is the main competitor for Taylor's. So okay. I think they also knew, hang on, we get the number one salesperson, jumping onto Carpegiani, and that's how it spun from there.
Okay.
So I was with Servequip for 8 years.
Yep.
I then went to Servequip to a catering manufacturer in regards to a kitchen house dealer. Mm-hmm. I didn't last very long. I didn't really enjoy it.
Okay.
I was definitely more into the manufacturing side and then got approached by a Dandy.
Okay.
So I started off at a Dandy with they had very little knowledge of the industry. Mm-hmm. The people that were on
they
the board,
had little knowledge.
Oh, they definitely had a little knowledge of the industry.
Right, okay.
So going back to your 40 years, a Dandy actually stands for Applied Design and Engineering.
Right, okay.
So it's an engineering company as opposed to a refrigeration manufacturer.
Okay.
So that's what the pretense of it was.
Right.
And the thought process was to license the technology out to other manufacturers. It was never to build design.
Oh, was it? So, okay.
Oh, yeah. It was never actually to sell it
and to manufacture.
It was always to license it out. We were very fortunate to get a licensee in the US mm-hmm. that took the brand and sold into the US. We didn't get very many success going back to around about 2010, 2011. There's a bit of a recession going on.
Yeah.
So it was very difficult. So the only way forward after the investment that the board had put in was to actually build it and sell it ourselves.
Okay.
So then they needed a salesperson. And I was pretty much one of the first people to come on board at that
back
time.
Back in 2010. Okay.
So that's how it, that's, more
that's
or less how
it started.
That's how it started, yeah.
So you've really been there from the inception of the manufacturing and selling into the UK market.
Yeah. So I've seen it from the word go, from pulling up outside, going, no sales brochures, no nothing.
Yeah.
Start afresh. How do we go about this and helping them convert that into what we are today?
And a market leader.
In refrigeration drawers, definitely. I would say so.
Well, that's quite a story, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, we just talked about that since a Dandy was founded in 1984 the kind of 40 years of the company. But if we talk about since 2010, you know, you've seen some big changes in the market. How do you keep ahead and forefront of the market?
It's a difficult one to keep ahead of the market. I think by having the right kind of product in the beginning, that helps massively. So our obviously our product's paintings, so no one, the technology there, no one can copy.
Yeah.
So that gives you a head start of so many years of having it painted as a technology, no one can copy it.
Okay.
So that gives you that head start straight away before you go anywhere. It's not just a box. We don't try and sell it as a refrigerated box of sorts. So by having the insulated container, the horizontal seal, those are the major parts that sets us aside from everybody else. And we don't have any force there in our conventional refrigeration drawers.
Okay. So you just told us a little bit about the drawer system. I mean, can you just expand a little bit about it? What is really unique about your system? Because I know that now, is it fair to say that some manufacturers have kind of not copied it, but are bringing out a similar, something kind of similar? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. And you can obviously see, so going back in the early days of the inception of trying to get licensees, there was a little company called ITW, which are called Foster's Refrigeration. We actually approached, we approached them to actually look at the license.
Right, okay.
They turned it down and says, we don't think you'll sell an awful lot, so no, thank you.
Wow, okay.
So that's what initially happened with those guys.
Okay.
So ever since then, we've had Precision, Foster's, Williams, Polar, all do a flexible drawer system.
Yeah.
So they are different, as you obviously can tell, compared to ours. Ours obviously has the insulated container.
Yes.
Which holds the cold. If you're holding the cold in that, it preserves the food for longer and a lot better. Also, our flexibility of fridge to freezer. Most, all the other drawers will go fridge to freezer increments of 1 degree.
Yeah.
Ours goes 0.1. So for likes of holding meat, fish, you can hold that 0.5. And that's just before freezing, so it keeps the moisture in.
Right, okay.
And one of the other major elements is we have no fans in our drawers. Fans dehydrate product.
Yeah.
So a lot of chefs use our drawers for the fish and for the meat products.
Okay.
It doesn't draw the moisture out. So the yield on the product is larger as well.
Right,
keep it there for longer.
Right, okay. So some new, I mean, I've seen it as well, even in my work. You know, it's somehow you've managed to make refrigeration sexy, a bit like how Rationale made combis. You know, it's the go-to thing. Everyone wants a Rationale. Now I'm hearing everybody wants a Dandy. You know, you talk to them about fridges and they want, honestly, the top chefs want your product.
Yeah, we our biggest customers are from a standard QSR.
Right.
To Michelin star.
We've got
double Michelin stars. Lots of Michelin stars use them. They see the advantage of how storing their foods and the product at that premium temperature is what they need. And they know that that will hold it at that temperature. No matter how many times you open that drawer, hot air rises, cold air sinks. So when you open that drawer with an insulated container, the cold air's got nowhere to go. It just stays there with the food.
Okay. So that's the, So, I mean, you've told us about the counter system, the drawer system, but you also manufacture retail cabinets, I think, which I don't think many people may or may not know. Can you tell us a bit about them?
Yeah, so the AirCell concept is another technology that's completely different. It's global patents on that as well.
Yeah.
And what you'll tend to find is you get a lot of back panel flow through a standard grab-and-go cabinet.
Yes.
So the airflow comes from the back, pushes all the way to the front, and initially it drops out.
Yeah.
Supermarkets also get the cold aisle syndrome. So when you go down a supermarket, it's really it's just dropping out all over the place.
Waste and energy.
What's one of the biggest killers? Just to run one cabinet is an average around about 2,500, 3,000 kilowatts just for one cabinet. So it's huge energy-wise. The Adandi system is actually brought into smaller pillars. So the airflow comes actually through the shelves, not actually through the back panel.
Oh, okay.
And it's in smaller increments. So each shelf has got a smaller increment of cold air in three different layers.
Wow, okay.
Top, middle, and bottom. So that allows the airflow to stay in that particular zone and doesn't fall out.
Okay. And they're open or they have doors?
No doors.
No doors.
I mean, you know, as you're aware, everything now nowadays has got a label. The grab-and-go cabinets are the same. They're all labelled as industry standard. So the Adandi drawer, the Adandi AirCell cabinet is labelled a B.
Right, which is good.
Which is good because
most, the rest of them are E's and below? Or?
No, they're a lot higher than that.
Oh, are they?
In order to get a B, you have to put a door on.
Right.
An A and a B. And the only solution they're finding is putting doors on without the technology. But once again, the main driver for that technology is not actually us selling the cabinets. That technology can be into any cabinet.
Yeah. And the problem is when you put doors on it in a high... turnaround environment, that's an issue because the doors open, close, and then they end up breaking, to be honest.
They do. More and more supermarkets are putting doors on. What you'll find, the door system is very difficult when you're in a smaller space, because if there's a queue behind you and you've got two or three people behind you trying to open that door and leverage that door, it's harder. And then somebody else comes up as well. And, you know, the condensation, the seals go, et cetera, et cetera. So you do have those issues.
True. Okay. Is there any specific innovations or projects that you'll want to share with us or most proud of, obviously without giving too much of competition, what's going on?
Yes. I mean, we are looking to do a more of a range on the air cell technology side. So there will be, we've only got one particular size cabinet now. So we're looking at to bringing out another two by the end of the year.
Okay.
To bulk up that range. But once again, the driver is actually to speak to more OEMs to get them to put it in into their systems.
Yeah.
So even if a Williams Fosters wanted to put our technology into theirs, they can. We have no problem with that.
Okay.
So they can innovate and put that in there.
Right, okay. So you're looking to partner up and license up more opportunities.
Correct. More opportunities, yeah.
So I mean, it's quite an impressive portfolio Dandy have got and a global reach. How many countries are you now selling in, and what's the kind of, where's the UK your strongest market, or is it the US? Or
so the UK is most probably our strongest market. We do quite well in Australia. We do exceptionally well in Asia Pacific. We mostly concentrate on hotels and the QSR market.
Right.
So it's more westernized.
Yeah.
And they get it. They want better kitchens, better equipment, etc. So we do quite well in that market sector. Middle East is pretty much on fire at the moment. We do exceptionally well in Saudi.
Oh, okay.
So we're doing really well this year in Saudi and Europe as well. And then we go all the way over to the US. So the US is doing okay. I wouldn't say they take a lot longer to try and understand the concept of new things. They like the old things. It's a bit like if you look at Rationale now, it's taken them, they've only just started to take off in the last 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. And they only entered the market, you know, five years ago.
Exactly, whatever it was. So it does take them a little bit more longer to adapt and understand what have you got here.
Mm.
You know, so they it does take a while, but it is growing and it grows every year, which is what we want, which is positive.
Great, okay. So what's, you know, to finish off with, what's the greatest achievement for Dandy?
I think it's a little bit of a personal one. I think in the US, we do quite well in the convenience sector. So the convenience sector, that's what it's called over there. But over here, you'll notice that they're forecourt petrol stations, but they call it convenience over there. We've got quite a number of key partners, stroke customers over there.
Okay.
And one of them was someone called Sheetz. They've got roughly 700 outlets.
Right.
And they were interested in the Dandy brand and putting the Dandy drawers in. And we have to come up with a return on investment ROI.
Okay.
You just can't just say, swap it out. What's the benefits? Why should we swap it out? Like anything else when you're selling. I think we managed to save them over $1 million in oil savings.
Wow.
So that was something, how did I come across that? What did we do there? So one of the major things that you'll find when you go home tonight, you open your freezer, you get ice crystallization on your peas and on your fries, etc. That's because the cold air's dropped out. It's replaced with warm air, which is moisture, and it sits on that.
Yeah, you'd freak if you saw my freezer at home.
Yeah, most probably.
Yeah.
So they were bringing in these frozen products, onion rings, nuggets, fries, and the ice crystallization effect on them was huge, lots of water. So water doesn't go well with oil.
Right.
So we saved them 3.7% of oil savings across 680 stores, across a 7 to 8 year lifespan of the Dandy drawer system.
Cool.
And they're like, this is a no-brainer, swap them all out.
Wow.
So we had a big rollout throughout all our sites of putting all our drawers in.
700 sites?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, 700. And that's not a huge site in America. That's just above medium. So, but that was a big gear change a couple of years ago for us in the US.
Yeah, yeah, a massive achievement.
Yeah, they saw the benefit of that. But actually being in there, being in the kitchen with them, you know, weighing the fries up, weighing everything up and testing and retesting the oil, weighing the oil up, doing that, showing it logically what could be proved.
You've had to prove it.
Yeah, prove it, and then showing the wastage, showing how much it was. It was a game changer for them, and they're like, wow, amazing.
That is an achievement. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Well, Carl, thank you so much for being part of this show and taking the time to be here and telling our listeners about Dandy. I think we've all learned something today as well. Now, in the final part of the show, we're going to be going on to discuss technology in the kitchen. Sophie now rejoins me and Carl, and we're going to be delving into technology in the kitchen, a specific topic we've been asked to cover by a fair lot of our listeners. Sophie, how would you say technology has changed in the landscape of commercial kitchens in the last few years?
Well, it's opened up new avenues for sort of culinary activity.
Okay.
With chefs that maybe previously wouldn't look at maybe using a sous vide application, molecular gastronomy, that type of thing. It has opened up massively a new way of cooking.
Okay. Things like, you know, Vario pans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. The up-to-date rationale where you can actually set it to cook your meat exactly how you want it. You know, you put it in initially on a high temperature, say, to sear the outside, and then a slow cook, and you can just press the buttons and away you go. Yeah. I mean, that's incredible.
I mean, in your work, obviously, as event catering, I guess it's quite hard, isn't it? Because, I mean, what are you doing when you reheat on site? I mean, do you take the kitchen with you, or what do you, yeah?
It's completely different to obviously working in a high-class restaurant. You have the last one, which we mentioned earlier, the wedding. I had three large gas ovens to
right.
work with.
Okay.
And that's you adapt accordingly.
So you literally take that and the LPG and you've set that up as a field kitchen, effectively.
Yeah. They're heavy, they're old-fashioned, they use gas, and you work with that. However, chefs that work in high-class restaurants and hotels, etc., have this amazing technology at their hands, which is great for them.
Yeah, definitely. Carl, how would you say technology has the ability to improve efficiency and productivity in the kitchen?
I think technology can do that for you, but I think most importantly for me, it's about using the technology before service more than during service.
Okay.
That's the number one point. And I think it's down to the designers to design the right flow of the kitchen and internal flow.
Looking at me.
Yes, I'm looking at you. Because I think that's where you get your efficiency from.
Yeah.
There's no point putting something in a place where it's not productivity-wise and it's not going to get the plates out quicker or better.
Yeah.
So I think the combination of both is very important.
Of equipment and design.
Correct.
Basically coming together to create those efficiencies, be they operational or energy.
I think operational energy wise, of course you can get the energy efficiency from equipment, but let's be honest, it's not really, the chef's more important about the food and the quality that's coming out.
Yeah.
And that's what they're wanting. If the technology is there to be used, I'm sure they will use it. And there's abundance of it as years have gone by.
Yeah.
And that's what they're looking for.
But it's got to be relevant, I guess.
Yes, it's relevant. For me, I'm a great believer when it comes to technology, is understanding. If I was in a chef's position, a bit like a football manager, I'd be going, what am I good at? Sophie's good at seafood. Sophie's good at meat products.
Yeah.
So you'd have that efficiency, that technology in those areas, because that's what you can produce best at. So you'll always be, that's where I want to be the best at. That's where I want the technology. It doesn't mean you have to have technology throughout the kitchen.
No.
Those
no.
specific areas.
So even things like temperature monitoring and things like that, they kind of help, I guess, sort of, you know, those sort of technologies. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, record keeping is obviously of high importance. and testing your meats that are coming out of the oven, checking they're cooked properly, things like that. Obviously, the technology we've got nowadays to monitor all of that is helpful in every single way, rather than when I was younger, you know, you just test the meat by squeezing it and seeing if it was actually
cooked.
You know,
the
right consistency, and that's how whether the steak was, you know, well done, medium, rare.
I guess there's barriers though, isn't there, because I guess some of this technology is expensive, and especially in the current climate, can small businesses afford to do? I don't know, you know, is that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, technology in regards to monitoring-wise, that's a little bit big bear for me, because you've got the point where everyone has their own technology. So trying to put that into one, the chef will have to have like 10 apps on his phone, and he doesn't want that.
No.
I think a big shout out to K-Tech, for me, who's trying to put that all together and deliver one platform, is what the industry needs.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you're right. Because everyone's doing their own sort of thing, and then, which one's going to come out with that? Yeah.
That would be a game changer. If someone gets everyone on one platform can just plug it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Away you go, and you can monitor it.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's
then,
what the, yeah.
A market leader, if you like, the Google of website searching,
correct.
If you like. But, yeah.
Yeah, the chef in charge obviously whichever kitchen needs to still be on hand and to, you know, look after his team as well as all the other operation things he needs to do. So yeah, to have one app would be amazing, and that would save him time, and that would give him time with his team.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree.
So, did you see robotics coming into the kitchen? I mean, I've seen a few bits in London, robotics happening more front of house. What's your view on sort of robotics? And I mean, or do you have a view?
I presume things like the tasks that are laborious and time consuming, but that robotics could take over, as in, say, vegetable prep.
Yeah.
Or making your washing area, your pot wash, you know, more up to date, more modern and fast. Mm. Yes, I do. For me, I suppose I have learnt in the old fashioned way of using, you know, your basic utensils, and to be a proper chef, you need to learn the basics, and you have to have that behind the knowledge of producing good food. So I'm not opposed to any new technology, because I think you have to move with the times, but I would still like to think in a kitchen that you wouldn't have robotics that could, say, completely make your beurre blanc, which I know you can. You've obviously got a Thermomix, but I don't know.
Yeah. Carl, have you got a view on robotics?
Yeah, I think robotics does have a place, but I think it's a place in a system where it's operator-led as opposed to chef-led.
Yeah.
I think that's where I'd put robotics. So, for instance, you get the robotics where flipping the burgers, dropping the fries.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah.
I think that's where it would find its way. I think having a robotic, the first robotic Michelin star chef. I don't think that's coming just quite yet.
What shall we name her?
Yeah. Exactly, like her.
Yes. Yeah.
No, you got that one in quick, Sophie, didn't you?
But yeah, I mean, in London, I've seen a few restaurants that have got robots, and there's one actually down, and I touched on last episode, in episode one, I think, down at near Festival Hall, a restaurant called Ping Pong. They've actually got two robots working there, and they basically bring all the food from the kitchen out to stations, and then the waiters take it to the customers, and then they also have another one that takes all the dirties back from the stations back to pot wash.
Okay.
Would that work for your event? Wouldn't be off-road?
No, no. They're not going to interact. They're not going to smile. They're not going to say to the customer, "You having a great time?" No, not for me. But then again, I have my nephews who went to a place in Milton Keynes, which was the bowling alley, and they have the two little robots that come out, and they bring their food, they bring their fries, their burgers.
Seriously?
Yeah. And they pull it out on a tray and the milkshakes. And to them, it was insane. They loved it. They were like, "Auntie Sophie, have you seen this?"
So I think it's got its market, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's, to be fair, this is a Chinese restaurant. It's quite a trendy venue with a lot of tech involved. So I think it's got its marketplace.
Yeah.
But it's probably not for certain markets. Carl, you know, how can technology help us achieve our sustainability goals? If we talk about, you know, our net zero goals, those sort of things, how can that support us?
I think you've got to look at the whole process as what you've got within your company, within the format. It's not just about the actual equipment that you're putting out in the place in the kitchen. It's how you arrive at that piece of kit in order to get that sustainably net zero. So that's what you've got to look at, the efficiencies within delivering it, making it, and the processes that were put in place to get it to site as well.
So not actually just the kit, which is about the journey from when it was first born,
Yes, that's most important. And then that will help you on your net zero goal.
Definitely. Yeah, and whether it was made in Timbuktu or...
Correct. Or out of space somewhere. You know, how much fuel does a space rocket take to get it to you?
Yeah, you're right. And you've got to look at the whole journey, haven't you? And then I guess as well, end of life.
End of life is big importance. And don't I say it, but a Dandy has a big tick on sustainability, because our insulator container can come out of the drawer.
It doesn't
have to go to landfill.
Just keep going.
Keep going.
Yeah, which is, huge benefit. And it's a universal size, I guess, so it'll just slot into the next new machine coming along.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, question for both of you, really. Sophie, maybe start with you. And we sort of touched on it, I know, but can technology in the kitchen enhance the dining experience for customers? And I know we kind of, or is it a kind of more of a hindrance?
No, it can definitely enhance.
Yeah.
without a doubt, especially if you have a young team and you are training them up to become more professional, using equipment, as I said, like a rationale would absolutely enhance, you know, customers' well, not the presentation of the food, but the end product.
How it's cooked.
Yeah, to help to cook it. So, yeah, I don't feel it's a hindrance. There can, if it goes too far, yes, obviously there'd be a hindrance, but no, it's beneficial.
Yeah, and I guess it's linked to the skill sets of the chefs in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I guess some environments they may not cope with, like an all singing, all dancing, vario, pan, rationale, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't want to say which environments, but...
Yeah.
It
definitely enhances, and it's the way you use it. And, yeah, having all the planning throughout the kitchen, the right, as Carl said, the right process, it will definitely enhance.
Carl, have you got a view on that, how it enhance for the end, you know, for the end product for the customer?
Yeah, once again, it's down to the timing as well, because if a chef's spending so much time prepping and doing the forward work beforehand, if they've got some, the technology there to speed that up and do that, it enhances them more time to actually look at what they're delivering instead of trying to rush it out. So the technology-wise, it will help you care for that product.
Okay.
It'll help you look at that product, the efficiency of that product, the sustainability of that product. It gives you the whole ballpark for me.
I guess consistency as well.
Yeah, consistency is absolutely spot on. You've got to get the right consistency. Yeah. The chef doesn't want to put out, you know, not a very good meal. They're there to deliver. Yeah, no. The name's on it, in essence. That's what they want.
Do you have a view, either of you, on what emerging technologies we might see in the future? I mean, obviously, AI is huge at the moment. We've all got ChatGPT on our phones, I guess. Sophia?
I look at it. I read the Caterer Mag. I'm part of the staff canteen, the chef's forum, and I look at it. And it's more front of house, actually, to be honest.
Than
the kitchen.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Even down to, you know, you go to your local McDonald's, you just key it in and it's there. There's no front of house no more trying to take your order.
Yeah.
So it's efficiency once again and how quick it is.
Yeah.
Or you can place your order on an app and it's there waiting for you when you get in.
Yeah.
So it's all to do with front of house.
I think you still need, in the kitchen, you still need the chefs. You still need 100%. The personal touch. And hopefully that would never, that will never stop.
No. I mean, we're seeing, I don't know if you walk past the Amazon shop. I went in today to pick up and I just tapped my debit card, picked the water up.
Yeah.
And walked out.
Picked the donuts up and walked out. It's quite clever.
Yeah, it's very clever. Very clever. And yeah, for front of house and efficiency, it works perfectly. Yeah.
But once again, it's cutting down the labour costs, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
So where will all those people go that were in the hospitality industry years come by? It's just, it's a little bit frightening.
It is in that way, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Carl, what advice could you give to chefs and restaurant owners looking to incorporate technology into their kitchens?
Once again, we're back to what I said. You've got to look at your return on investment.
Yeah.
Is for me top of the board.
Yeah.
No chef comes into a business if they're owning it and saying, I'll be gone within 2 years. It's a longevity.
Yeah.
So they have to look at the equipment. Will it do fit the purpose, what I want it to do? Will it excel? Will it give me that consistency of product that I want from it?
Okay.
That sustainability aspect, is that there as well? Do I want that from it? So it's looking at all that and what can I get from it?
Okay.
Will it work for what I want to deliver to my customer?
Yeah. And I think as well, when people, especially if they're starting out, sometimes, I'm sure you see it, people sometimes just buy the cheapest kit. I mean, obviously, sometimes economics, but they just buy the cheapest kit. They're not really thinking about the long-term OPEX or benefits to the business, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any harm in anyone wanting to get a cheaper product if it fits
what they
want.
Yeah.
I haven't got no problem if they buy something else, whether it's a Dandy or not. Mm. For me, will it fit for their purpose and what they want? They will know their business. I mean, I went to a site and the kitchen must have been, you call it a kitchen, it was roughly 3 meters by two.
Right.
But they just said, we have to have an Dandy. It's as simple as that. And all they sell is burgers and fries.
Okay.
But they turn over 3 million.
Wow.
but that's all they do.
Just on burgers and fries?
Just burgers and fries.
Okay.
But they says we need an Adani to hold it. But they could have, they had something cheaper there. They said it just doesn't do the job.
Okay.
So it's down to, once again, that person understanding what their needs are, what they want, and will they get the return on that investment?
True. Yeah. Okay. Have you got any bits of advice for someone starting out on, you know?
Yeah, I would agree that investing in better quality equipment sets you up for the future. However, when you are first starting out, that is very daunting. You don't know how many covers you're going to get. You don't know the continuity of customers, the footfall, etc. So to buy something a little bit cheaper initially, another model, try it, see how you get on, and then your business starts to grow, then invest in, you know, the more expensive type of equipment. It is scary when you first start out and you think, wow, I can't afford that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just need to look at what options are available, what investments you can make, and buy what's suitable for you at that time.
Yeah, that's some good advice there, I think. I mean, Sophie, how, you know, technology is evolving all the time, as we've talked about, you know, AI and different things. I mean, how do you stay informed for your business about technological, you know, advancements, you know, and
yeah, for my business, I do. I am like social media led, to be quite honest. I look at that. As I said, the chef's forum is great. The staff canteen, the caterer mag, all of that. That's you know, widely open to you. So
talking to your peers, I guess.
Yeah, and I read a lot, all the time. You know, flicking through various, you know, up-to-date market research, etc., to see what might suit my business.
Okay. Any final thoughts on the importance of embracing technology in the commercial kitchen?
For me, I think you've definitely got to embrace it. Mm. You've got to understand it, see whether it fits for you, whether it works for you.
Yeah.
I can categorically say that, you know, most manufacturers here in the UK would happily give a demonstration to see whether it fits your needs. So I think that's the first and foremost, you know, get a demonstration, understand it, will it fit your needs, and look at the technology.
And the benefits.
And the benefits, definitely.
Yeah. Any final thoughts from you about
it? Yeah, just always move forward. Again, look at the opportunity, see what's there. If it fits for you, as you say, go with it. Don't be scared of changing times, because we are changing on a daily basis, really. So you've got to look at it and accept it and see what fits.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the commercial kitchens or catering, we've been a little bit slow off the mark, I guess, at points compared to other sectors, if we look at completely other sectors.
Again, it's a bit like the women in the industry. We are not as many as the men, and it's just, I wouldn't say it's dinosaur anymore, but it was. So you've got to keep up with the trends, and you've got to move forward and look at what is available and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd just like to add on the women bit for you.
Okay.
I just came back from a CEDA conference, and it was very, very good to see that there was more women young women coming through, and more youngsters as a general. I mean, when I go to these conferences, I think the average age must be about 65 or something. So it's great to see these young academy people coming through, wanting to learn the industry, wanting to drive forward. So it's not just from a chef's point of view. It's also from a design and from a manufacturing point of view. So we are seeing young ladies coming through.
Yeah.
Quite a few of them, which it was really, really great to see.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I do take on students, and I've got one in a couple of weeks. He started doing some cookery lessons with me, and now he's coming through, and I'm going to get him across the board involved in the catering company. But we do need more youngsters, more females in the hospitality industry, and design as well.
Yeah, and it is changing. And Carl, as you said, CEDA, Catering Equipment Distribution Association, they have got the academy, haven't they, now?
Correct.
Actually, we've got a show coming up about that.
Brilliant. Look forward to listening to that one.
Yeah. And even FEA, Food Service Equipment Association, who are the manufacturers, they've got a female chair coming, and we'll be interviewing her at the conference. So it's happening, but it has been slow. So Sophie, as is tradition in this series, the guest of this episode asks the question to the next guest on the next episode. I know you know who the next guest is.
Yeah.
What question have you got lined up for them?
So what I'd like to know is, under Caprice Holdings, there are some really innovative restaurants, strong brands. How do you come up with those ideas? Where do the concepts come from? And does your brain just think, yeah, sexy fish, that sounds cool. What am I going to do with it?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, that's a great question. And I look forward to hearing what our guest has got to say about that. Thank you. Well, a big thank you to Sophie and Carl for taking the time to be here on the show with me in London. It's been really good to talk to you both. I hope you've both enjoyed it.
I have.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
thank you so much for having me. Thank you
for having me.
Well, that concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. It's been fantastic to hear about Sophie's journey at the start of the show and to learn more about Adandi and Carl's role within the food service equipment sector. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. As ever, any specific questions or anything you'd like me to cover on future shows, please email me on radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. On the next episode, we'll be heading back to London again. We'll be interviewing the chef director of Caprice Holdings, a really important figure in the culinary world. He oversees some of London's most prestigious restaurants, including Le Caprice, Scott's in Richmond, Sexy Fish. We'll also have one of my most favourite people in our sector, a gentleman who runs a leading supplier of high-quality cooking equipment in the UK for 28 years. He's provided specialised cooking suites to some of the most prestigious venues, including Caprice Holdings, Soho House, The Ritz, and Michel Rouge La Gavroche. Click subscribe to follow us. If you've got a moment, please rate us on our podcast and don't miss out on the next episode coming out on the 12th of August. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.